Welcome to the Placebo Magic Podcast, the podcast about theatrical spiritual practice for atheists. I'm your host, Durmok, the wizard and peasant lord of this vast 10-acre realm of Hobdur, also known as Farm Code Gary, also known as Garrison Benson.
Greetings, placebo mages. Today, my big sister April Benson joins us to discuss a wizardly tome called Digital Minimalism, Choosing a Focused Life in a Noisy World by Cal Newport. Digital minimalism is sort of halfway between self-help and philosophy with some pop psychology blended in. It outlines why and how to place limits on your usage of digital communications platforms to minimize their costs and maximize their benefits on your quality of life. The primary approach recommended by the book is to take a 30-day digital declutter, during which time you take a break from all optional digital technologies and spend time exploring alternative ways to connect with people and spend your time, and then afterward to reintroduce only those technologies that best serve what you deeply value, with reasonable limits placed on their use. The remainder of the book focuses on some broader approaches toward digital minimalism, seeking the benefits of solitude, seeking high-quality, high-bandwidth social interactions instead of low-bandwidth likes, cultivating a robust leisure life, and embracing slow media in a similar manner as slow food. So, greetings, April.
Hi.
And, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Okay, I'm Gary's sister. I'm a stay-at-home mom of one child. And Gary and I thought it would be relevant to mention that I do have an undergrad degree in psychology and a graduate degree in divinity. And relative to Placebo Magic Podcast, one of the things I was actually interested in studying was belief, especially people's beliefs about kind of spiritual objects and how they come to develop those beliefs, which is kind of relevant.
Mm-hmm. All right. So it's not just that you're my sister, you're also credentialed.
Sort of.
Okay. So I thought that we might as well just start with the most interesting thing to discuss, which is that we've both attempted this 30-day digital declutter that the book describes. So I did mine during the month of October, and when did you do yours?
Let's see. Mine was from the end of October until the end of November.
Okay.
So right before Halloween to right after Thanksgiving.
Okay. So the digital declutter, there's not a specific list of rules exactly. It's more like guidelines, and you kind of craft your own rules. So for me, during the 30 days, I stopped using Facebook, Reddit, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, streaming video like Netflix and YouTube and stuff, and podcasts. Though I did keep using Facebook for work to promote events. And so all those apps I deleted from my phone and, yeah, only logged into Facebook for work and otherwise didn't log into them at all. And so what about you? What kind of rules did you set for your 30 days?
I stopped using Facebook, stopped using YouTube. And then I didn't listen to podcasts, but one exception I made to like audio material is I was in line for a bunch of audiobooks in the library, and some of them I've been in line for like a year. Uh-huh. And so my one exception was no audiobooks, no podcasts, except two of those books finally became mine to rent. Uh-huh. And if I didn't take advantage, they'd be gone. So I allowed myself those, but otherwise no audio material either, and okay. No Netflix either.
Cool. Okay, so how was your experience overall? Was it, you know, challenging or?
Yeah, I think it was in some ways easier. Like I was more entertained and not bored, and I kind of thought I might sort of miss especially the audio component more. Maybe the most surprising thing to me was for the first like 2 weeks, I would keep pulling Facebook up on my phone, and I deleted Facebook, the app from my phone, a long time ago because I didn't want to use it all the time. Uh-huh. But I just got in the habit of pulling up like Facebook.com on the Internet Explorer app. And so I kept, like, I would sit down and I would pull it up and then I'd be like, dang, no, and shut it down. And I would probably do that, like, the first week, I probably did that, like, I don't know, 15 times a day. And then it slowly decreased. Even at the end, I would occasionally catch myself being like, what am I doing? No. But that was kind of the hardest part, is just how automatic that habit was. But the other components were pretty easy.
Yeah, I found Facebook was definitely the hardest thing in a way. I mean, I didn't have that because I had had the app and was in the habit of using the app, but I would kind of pull up my phone and just sort of stare at the screen and realize there was nothing to do on there.
Yeah.
I would look at like the list of apps and I would see like, you know, there's no Facebook or Reddit or Twitter or anything. But I found like, I kept thinking of like pithy one-liners and having nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I don't have anybody to share this with. And I felt like I was kind of craving that, like validation or just like the feedback of getting likes from my random thoughts throughout the day.
Yeah.
Especially since I live alone, I didn't have any like buddy to just like tell them to.
We have that in common. Cause I don't live alone, but my kid goes to school and my spouse often travels for work. So there are weeks when, like, unless I take a really, you know, deliberate measure to make a lot of plans with friends, I don't see that many adults. And so, yeah, sometimes I think I use Facebook to, like, make weird little comments about my day just to feel like I've engaged with someone, even if I haven't really engaged with someone.
Right, right.
So I definitely had the same impulse where I would think these weird little autobiographical, like, caption-like thoughts about myself.
Yeah.
But they would just... you know, sit with me.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't done this, but I honestly thought about just carrying a notebook with me and writing them down. So I thought like, well, I'll either learn something interesting about my psychology by, you know, maybe I'll figure out why, just, I don't know, just see what effect that has if writing them down kind of relieves the pressure or if it doesn't. But then also I thought like, oh, maybe I could just become a stand-up comedian or something.
Yeah, you never know what you'll find. I think it's funny because I feel like, you know, 50 years ago, if someone made like a comic strip about people who had these weird little caption like first, you know, third person thoughts about themselves throughout the day, that would just be like such a weird, funny character.
Well,
and now like most of us have become these people who think about ourselves in that way.
I guess it's really just like Garfield or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Like thought bubbles.
Today I had this thought, like, our dog is 14 years old and she's totally deaf. And just like about maybe 40 minutes ago, I was by myself in the living room, well, with her. And she sneezed and I was like, bless you. And I thought of this caption of like, I just said bless you to a deaf dog. Uh-huh. But that's the kind of thing, like, to think about yourself in Facebook captions is really strange. I did not post it, I would just like to say. Uh-huh.
I found with those kind of apps that I would normally browse, what helped a lot was that I essentially just substituted reading books for those habits. So like during all the times in the day that I would normally, or most of the times that I would normally be browsing Facebook or something, I just picked up a book. So I kept like a few books on my coffee table, and I would be reading like two or three books at a time, each of which was sort of suited a different mood.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually ended up reading a ton during the first few weeks of it. And then toward the end, I wasn't reading quite as much, I think because I had been using reading to just like substitute, you know?
Oh yeah. So you were kind of over the substitution more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. And then part of this whole digital declutter approach that the book advocates is that you don't just stop doing things. You kind of explore other things you could be doing with your time. So, did you have anything in particular that you sort of pursued in that regard?
You know, I really wanted to, like at the beginning, I was like, oh, maybe I'll take a ceramics class or maybe I'll start playing the drums. But I felt like a month just wasn't really long enough for me to get into much. And really what I did do is I got more sleep because I had been in the habit before of like, I would do this awful thing and I would pull up Facebook when I was in bed and just like scroll through for ages. And I feel like the light would kind of keep me awake and like keep me into it, but I wasn't gaining anything or learning anything. So mm-hmm. I stopped doing that. And I think I just went to bed earlier and got better sleep. And then the other thing that kind of, you know, took up more time is I think I went back to a Spanish habit. I use this app called Duolingo, and I used to do it every day really faithfully. And because I like found myself looking at my phone, kind of hoping for entertainment, a lot of times instead of like scrolling through Facebook or looking at some other kind of app or, you know, going on YouTube, I would just pick up my Duolingo and do my Spanish instead. So it's still kind of using the phone for like substitute entertainment. But for me, it's something that I wanted to do and have been striving to do.
Right.
So I guess those are the kind of, I mean, sleep is not a hobby or, and nor is it personal exploration, but it was good.
Right. Right.
So I think too, like we, as the season got more wintry, we've been playing a lot more games in our family at night. And so a lot of the time that I would have been scrolling Facebook before, I was like playing Uno or games like that with my kid.
Right.
Cool. Did you explore anything new other than reading?
Really just, I was reading a lot more. And then the other thing was I explored more in terms of social interaction, because since I live alone, I think that I've used social media kind of to alleviate that loneliness. Mm-hmm. And so what I decided to do was to try to be more proactive about exploring other ways to connect with people that were more substantive. Mm-hmm. So I used Skype a lot more than usual to try to get like that. Well, because one of the things the book talks about is this kind of amount of bandwidth of social interaction, where when you're talking to someone face to face, you have all these different types of communication that are happening simultaneously in terms of tone and body language and everything. And it's like a lot of information is being communicated, and your brain is really stimulated by all of the different facets of that, that it is analyzing at the same time. Whereas if you are, you know, send a text to somebody, then you have just this like one dimension of communication, which is through the text. And then if you click like, that's even less. That's so I thought, you know, I'm going to use Skype because that's like the best, the with video chat rather. I mean, it doesn't matter which platform you use really, but with video chat, you get as much communication as you can get over a digital communication, you know?
Yeah.
And then I also just talked on the phone more, which is, I think I'm kind of definitely very much in that like millennial phone phobia kind of camp, where I just like hate talking on the phone usually, but I tried to just push myself out of my out of my comfort zone and seek that out because it's so much more dynamic than just like texting or that kind of thing. But I also wrote some letters too, just to kind of keep experimenting with the, and I found writing letters, even though it is like, it's, you know, as far as that sort of level of bandwidth, it's the same pretty much as like writing an email mostly, but I did find that just because I'm sitting there with a piece of paper and no distractions, that having just sitting for like 20 minutes with my attention sustained on that person, that writing a letter, even though it's kind of a one way experience, I still felt like I had a social experience because I had this like sustained, I guess the mental image of that person listening or whatever. I kind of felt like I had a little, you know, tea time with somebody or something.
Yeah.
So otherwise I didn't really try to do too much in terms of hobbies or anything else like that, but I really did just read a ton during that month. So
I think I sort of hope maybe as I continue to not use social media as much, maybe I'll start to notice, you know, more and more time becoming available, and that will be for new hobbies. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely doesn't end with the 1 month.
Yeah. I found that the thing that I missed the most, because I didn't really miss Facebook that much, except for that kind of impulsivity. But the thing I did miss a lot was podcasts. And it's just that, I think I realized that I was kind of overly dependent on podcasts to sort of break up the silence. And not that there's anything wrong with podcasts necessarily, but I think I was just kind of addicted to the sort of just filling the air with noise, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm exactly the same. And I found myself too, like, noticing my kind of isolation a little more. Like, I'm not very isolated. Like, I see people when I walk my kid to school, and I see those same people, friends and acquaintances, when I pick them up. But I don't always make plans during the day. And after about a week and a half of, you know, no Facebook, no YouTube, and no podcasts, I kind of noticed the quiet a little more, and definitely called friends more and had to reach out and make some plans. Because I think I do the same thing. It's just nice to have a little noise sometimes.
Yeah.
And especially podcasts, I kind of have let myself go back to audiobooks, like, with no qualms. Although I feel now that I definitely want to choose audiobooks that, like, educate me or enrich my life or challenge me, instead of just leaving them on if they're subpar just for the, you know, kind of breaking up of the silence.
Yeah.
But podcasts, I'm kind of I'm a little more skeptical of them now. So I'm a little more choosy. And there are podcasts that I've welcomed back, like yours, and a few other ones that always seem to, like, really challenge me or interest me. But there are other ones that I think really just in retrospect were for the noise and didn't really enrich my life or my intellect or challenge me in any way. So I've kind of dropped those.
Yeah.
But yeah, same thing. I really became kind of addicted in a way, like a very subtle, mild, you know, kind of using them as a filler for other things. And I didn't really notice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, I feel like with Facebook, I realized pretty quickly during this experience that the value that it had been providing to my life was really small compared to the cost in terms of my attention. But podcasts, on the other hand, even as I realized, like, oh, I guess I've been kind of addicted to this sort of filler noise, I feel like I've had so many great experiences with podcasts,
mm-hmm.
that it's never something I would consider just, like, giving up entirely, but
no, me neither.
Kind of being more cautious about it.
Yeah, in some ways, I mean, I expected when I did the 30-day experiment that I would be like, oh yeah, life is so much better without this and this and this. And actually, I came away with increased thankfulness for a lot of the technologies, you know, uh-huh. especially audiobooks and the good podcasts, the ones that I feel like are really kind of enlivening for me.
Uh-huh.
For those, I actually felt like, wow, those really are an asset to my life, and I'm so glad I have them.
Mm-hmm.
But then Facebook was the real loser
yeah.
in the experiment. Like, I just spent so many hours just kind of mindlessly kind of waiting for, like, a hit of something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, kind of realized that it just doesn't offer me a lot most of the time.
Yeah, that's what I like. There are definitely things that I've used that are more useless than Facebook, but when I compare the time that I put into them versus the value, Facebook is by far the biggest loser.
Yeah.
Because it's just such a big time sink.
The only thing is, I think I thought to myself, like, oh, well, does that mean I should quit Facebook? But actually, I think three different times during the 30 days, there was, like, a question that I could only answer on Facebook. And two of the times it had to do with some kind of, like, date or time of an event at my kid's school.
Mm-hmm.
And they posted it there, and that was the only spot. And so I logged in to try to find out the information. And then the third time, I was actually, like, making a photo gift for someone in the family, and I needed, like, a few more photos. And so I went to Facebook to download their photos to use for this gift.
Uh-huh.
So I came away, like, mostly, like, I definitely don't want to use Facebook at night. Like, it should not be with me in bed. And I don't want to be looking at it during the day, especially when other people are in the room with me and I want my attention to be on them. But I'm still going to keep my account because it is kind of, it made me realize, like, oh, you know, this is a communication tool that I could escape from, but it would take extra effort to try to track down some of those details. I just think if I can manage my usage of it and not use it so much again, then it's useful for me. But if I kind of let it get to the point again where I'm like scrolling at night and it's just meaningless, then I'm going to have to cut it off. We'll see.
Yeah. So that kind of makes a good transition into sort of the aftermath, or the, I forget what he calls it in the book, the minimalist technology screen. But basically the idea is that after you do your digital declutter, then you go back to the drawing board and sort of reintegrate technologies that, well, here's the criteria. That's number one, it has to serve something that you deeply value. Offering some benefit is not enough. Two, it has to be the best way to use technology to serve that value. If not, replace it with something better. And three, it has to have a role in your life that is constrained with a standard operating procedure that specifies when and how you use it. Basically to make sure that you're maximizing the benefit but minimizing the cost. So, yeah. Have you made any like specific changes or any specific thoughts about how you sort of, you know, post digital declutter, what technologies you want to use, you know, differently or that kind of thing?
I definitely have not been as stringent or as organized as the author. Like, he makes it sound like a really organized program, and I did not do that. Mm-hmm. But especially because I felt like the takeaways for me during the month, I just felt like they were really clear. And the main thing was just no social media at night in bed, period. Mm-hmm. And then also, one of the main reasons I decided to read the book and to do the go ahead and follow what he recommended and do the 30 days was I really don't like it when I'm in the room with someone else and they don't like hear me talk, or they were talking and then all of a sudden they're like not there, you know, because they're looking at their phone. Mm-hmm. And I just dislike that feeling. And several different times I kind of caught myself doing that same sort of thing to my child, where, you know, my child thought he was in the room with another person. And then, you know, mid conversation or just, you know, in the middle of being together in the room, realized that I wasn't actually there, and he would get really frustrated. And so another thing, and I haven't been like super firm because I do use my phone as a tool and as a camera and as a music player and all those things. But another thing is just having my phone less in the way of family time when other people are home, you know? So like, I used to listen to podcasts sometimes, even while other people were home and they weren't like watching TV themselves. Mm-hmm. So like maybe Hudson would be playing and I might be cooking, but I'd have like my headphones in and I'd be like listening to a podcast. And so I've cut that off too, where if someone else is in the room and that person is not, you know, themselves listening to something or like plugged in away from me in some alone time in the same room, if they're not doing that, then I definitely am not going to be listening myself because I want to be present, you know? So they're not sort of, they don't have that moment when they're like, nobody was listening to me. I can't believe this, you know?
Right.
But those are the main things. Those are like, that's not nearly as organized as the book might recommend. But For me, that was kind of my takeaway. What about you?
Yeah, I haven't gone through like this exact procedure that he outlines, but I have made some changes in. The biggest thing is I deleted my personal Facebook account. I haven't like 100% quit Facebook, but looking at it through this criteria that he says, it's like, well, you know, Facebook does serve something that I deeply value, which is connecting with people, but it's definitely not the best way to use technology to serve that value. And I felt like, you know, anytime that I'm like want connection, it's better to go, you know, call somebody or something. So Facebook, I felt like we really was on the chopping block, except that Facebook is definitely the best way to use technology to promote events, which is part of my job. So I definitely thought like, there's no question that I got to keep using Facebook for work since I manage a theater. But then also just for like self-promotion for the podcast and for my writing and stuff, I thought it really is probably the best way to use technology for that in terms of just bang for your buck. So I've kept my Facebook page for my self-promotional stuff, But mm-hmm. what I did is I have like a secret alternate Facebook account that's under a different name and that has no friends and no likes. So I made that account an administrator of those pages. And so I can log into Facebook, but there's absolutely nothing in the newsfeed. And so I just go on and administer those accounts, but I don't have any kind of distraction of, you know, scrolling through the newsfeed. And then with Twitter and Instagram, I didn't like delete my account, but I've been trying to focus them toward that end. So like on Instagram, on both of them, I unfollowed pretty much everybody. So there's just nothing to see on the like feed. And then on Twitter, I went back and deleted all of my past tweets and retweets that didn't serve that end of just like self-promotion.
Yeah.
So, I was like, I want to keep these available as a presence. So if someone wants to try to contact me through that platform, they can do it. Or if they want to keep up with me through that platform. But otherwise, I don't really want to participate that much. So I'm just, so like if someone is really active on Twitter and they want to follow the podcast through Twitter, they can follow me on there and they'll see my, you know, I tweet whenever I put out an episode or whenever I put up a new poem on my website or something. But I'm not really on there. I'm just blasting things onto there for the benefit of whoever wants to use that platform.
Yeah, you're not surfing around and wasting time.
Yeah, so and the surfing is really, for me, I felt like, just in general, the surfing was the problem where I'm just like scrolling. So, so then I quit Reddit entirely, which I think Reddit was, for me, almost as addictive as Facebook. But it kind of was serving a different type of satisfaction, whereas Facebook is like a social thing. Reddit was more like a curiosity thing of like, I'm getting this sort of hit of things that are mildly interesting.
Yeah.
But that I just felt like there really wasn't any, it really wasn't doing anything for me. I mean, every once in a while I'll find some interesting thing in the comments, but what I found now is like, if I'm searching on a search engine for some kind of information, sometimes Reddit will come up as a search result and it'll take me right to like a comment section where there's some interesting discussion about it. And I can kind of get that without ever having to actually just browse the website.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then Pinterest, I basically decided, you know, I really like Pinterest and I find it's really, really helpful to help kind of cultivate ideas for creative projects and kind of like, if I want to make something, then I can sort of hone in on what exactly I want to make. But, I decided with Pinterest that I'm just going to use it as a search engine / idea board, but not use the main homepage of Pinterest, which is another one of these endless scrolling things.
Oh, where they just give you, where they feed you ideas.
Yeah. So I'll go on there and type in, you know, like a specific thing I want to search for ideas on, but I'm not just going to go to Pinterest.com and just scroll.
Yeah. I don't know what it is like with Pinterest, but it's just not as addicting to me. So like, I didn't even try to give Pinterest up or think about it. And I did use it because I, you know, have sort of different projects and I pin ideas, mm-hmm. but I've just never gotten into the liking of other people's ideas. So yeah, I think Pinterest is really helpful.
Yeah. I use it for like, I have all these different boards that are for different sort of categories. Like, I have one for like Hobdur mythology where I just saved a bunch of different pictures of like fantasy artwork and things like that. And then I'll have some for different like, you know, landscaping projects and things. And I found it really useful in that regard because once you start saving stuff to a board, then it starts suggesting similar things. And so you can kind of gradually build, you know, this sort of constellation of pictures that helps you to kind of clarify your thoughts. But yeah, I find it can be kind of addictive for me, just in terms of like, I just can't really see something cool without wanting to do it for myself.
Yeah. So. It's not really addictive on the device. It just becomes like more and more projects.
Yeah. It's almost like the fear of missing out, but for creative projects where I'm like, I don't necessarily need an algorithm to keep telling me projects that I should have on my list of to-do list.
Because you have enough.
Yeah.
Speaking of fear of missing out, do you feel like after, you know, taking away your feed from Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, do you feel kind of like you're missing out on anything? You know, something I'm curious about for myself. Like, I would love to kind of just quit apart from finding out about, you know, different events. But it is a really good way to just, like, you know, during the time, for example, during the 30 days, our parents, mom and dad, like, had something go on with, like, their siding. They were getting their siding replaced and, like, the workers didn't show up and I didn't know. And then Dina, my spouse, at one point was like, man, what is happening with your parents? And I was like, what are you talking about? And so sometimes I worry about just missing out on some, you know, pictures of my niece or, you know, just different information about what's going on with family, things like that.
Yeah. I would say I feel a tiny bit of that, and it's mostly like, it's mostly pictures of family is pretty much the only thing that I'm really that worried about missing out on.
Yeah.
But I've kind of just been like, well, I'm just going to try to call or Skype more often, and that will be overall a net gain in terms of connection. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I would kind of like if there was, I guess another solution I could have taken was to just unfriend everybody besides those people or yeah, unfollow everybody besides those people.
But it seems so, there's something about that, you know, like, I don't know, in our culture now, like there's
yeah,
something about unfriending. I think your approach is a little better. Just, it's like a go around the side door.
Yeah, I didn't really want to unfriend people because it is such a, it feels so aggressive, even if
yeah,
it's not really personal. So anyway, yeah. And then as far as events and things, I mean, since I live in a small town where the median age is like 52, so Facebook really isn't a great way to hear about events anyway. Like, it's yeah, much more productive to just go to the bank and look at the bulletin board or the credit union. Yeah. Or look at the bulletin board at the library, because a lot of events won't be on Facebook anyway. So in that sense, I really don't feel too much about missing out. One thing though that I have noticed is there have been a couple of times where I kind of like needed something, either a piece of information or some kind of favor from somebody locally. And normally I would just kind of blast out like, hey, does anybody have such and such a tool that I could borrow or whatever?
Yeah.
And I did find it was kind of challenging. Like, so during this time, after that 30 days, or I forget, but at some point I switched my wireless carrier and I was trying to ask around about network coverage because I ended up switching from Verizon's network to AT&T's network. And I was like, not sure if my coverage was going to be as good. And so normally I would just be like, hey, who's got AT&T? Is your coverage good?
Yeah.
And get a whole bunch of comments. And then so it ended up working out fine. I just texted a bunch of different people. And I probably texted like 6 people, 5 of whom had AT&T and said it works well. So now I
felt awesome,
confident about that. But I had to find a different solution to those kind of problems. But I guess my thinking about it is like, the only reason that Facebook works as that kind of tool is because it's sucking up so much of our attention all the time that yeah, like so many people have eyeballs on Facebook all the time that it's like, well, in a better world, we wouldn't be looking at Facebook that much. And it wouldn't work that way. Or maybe that's all that would be on Facebook is people trying to solve logistical problems and find out about events and things like that. Which is actually one of the things he talked about in the book is like using technology to facilitate face-to-face and just like, you know, higher quality social communication, but not using it as communication.
Yeah.
Like, so like, for instance, with texting, he talks about how he still uses texting quite a bit, but he tries not to have conversations over text. He'll just sort of say, hey, why don't we meet up for coffee? Or why don't you call me at such and such a time? And that, you know, you can kind of use it as a way to solve some of the logistical problems that we used to have around communication before we had these tools. but without losing the quality of communication that you get from more analog means.
Yeah, it's like a telegram, you know? It's like, I'm on my way.
Yeah.
But I can't be here for some reason, but, you know, this is what you need to know until our future date or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So I still sometimes have conversations over text, but I have tried to be a little more conscious of that and sort of try to use it to facilitate, like, just try to set up a time or something like that, you know? Yeah. So let's see.
I have a question for you, but I'm not sure if you want to go here yet, but,
okay.
I guess I'll ask it. I'm just interested in why you chose to include a discussion of this book on the Placebo Magic podcast. I mean, the connection I see is just that Placebo Magic really is very aware of the materials in our worlds and the various significances that we give to those materials and kind of the meaning that we can make out of them for our lives. And so with digital materials, seems like the same thing is true. And so there's a connection there, but I was just wondering if there was anything more to it.
Yeah. A couple of things. So one is that, you know, it kind of ties into some themes that we've touched on in the past on the podcast with regard to, like, sort of mythologizing technology to keep it at a safe distance, I guess. I think I heard good feedback from people when I did that spell of the week about, like, I forget exactly what it was, but something about sort of punishing your apps or something.
I remember that one. Like I think just the visual of making the little apps kind of stuck with me.
Yeah. And then, the other thing was that the last book we talked about in here, which was The King Warrior Magician Lover, I read that right before I read Digital Minimalism. And in that book, they had this archetype of a magician being, you know, somebody who has this sort of arcane knowledge, some kind of expertise that's not part of, you know, common knowledge, and that uses it to improve people's lives. But then there's also, like, the shadow magician, like the less healthy and less helpful form of it, which is kind of using technology or using this knowledge to manipulate people. And so reading this book, the author, Cal Newport, he's a associate professor of computer science at Georgetown University. And so I thought it was kind of interesting that he has some of the same arcane knowledge that your, you know, Mark Zuckerberg has, those kind of people. But he's using this to try to help people to contain and focus that power of that technology. Whereas I think a lot of these sort of technology companies and their engineers and psychologists are using it to try to manipulate people and extract value from them without necessarily providing as much value to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that, you know, through that kind of metaphor of technologist as magician, I thought this book was kind of interesting in that this is, like, you know, this author is sort of the good wizard of computer science, and we're so besieged by evil wizards who are trying to, you know, exploit us, that I kind of liked it through that lens. That was kind of, I mean, and I've been sort of trying to broaden the scope of the podcast a little bit toward just a more general sort of spiritual health for atheists or for or secular spiritual health or that kind of thing. And I think that in our, you know, in our world, this is really one of the biggest problems that we face nowadays is our relationship with technology.
Yeah. And the possibilities for endless distraction, you know, and not kind of directing your own attention.
Yeah. And I think our culture as a whole is really sort of a maximalist culture where it's sort of normal to believe that you can experience everything and that you should. And I think that sort of the default for, you know, like for young people is that you're on every platform. You're on, you know, at least every platform that all your friends are using, you know. And I think it's like, oh, you're going to watch every good every good show on Netflix, and you're gonna see every big new movie. And I think that there's sort of a I don't think there's enough of a sense in our broader culture of the limitations that, you know, everything has a cost, and that your attention is finite. And that's one of the things that really struck me about this book, is that with regard to social media and tech and digital communications and things like that, you know, most of these services are free in terms of dollar cost. And I've always thought, like, oh, well, the reason it's free is because your data about you is the product. They're collecting data about you and selling it. And that's how they make money, is by, you know, exploiting your privacy. And that's pretty nefarious and largely true. But I think what this book made me realize is that even more so than your data, the product is your attention.
Yeah. And your time, the time that your attention's on the screen. Yeah.
So like Facebook, you know, their business model is capture as much of your attention as possible and sell it to advertisers. And, you know, same with YouTube and Google and, you know, a lot of these companies and services. So, I live in a tiny house, and this book, it kind of jumped out at me as being sort of the digital equivalent of the way I think about stuff in my house, where it's like everything takes up space and everything has a cost in terms of how much space it's taking up and how much attention it's taking up in my house. You know, it's like, even if I had unlimited money, everything would still cost me something because it's just taking up part of my life. And I think that this book kind of made me realize the parallel there with, you know, the physical objects, that just because things that are in your digital life don't take up physical space, they still occupy the same kind of mental space. And you can only have so much and still have a quality life, you know?
Yeah. I think there's another way in which this kind of relates too, and it makes me think of another book of his that he wrote called Deep Work. Uh-huh. I'm not sure which one he wrote first, but Deep Work is kind of all about the idea that as humans, we greatly benefit from like sustained, very focused attention when we're doing certain types of mostly mental labor. Mm-hmm. But actually, I would argue also physical labor, but he didn't really talk about that. And Deep Work is all about protecting that space for yourself. So like drawing boundaries with meetings and office hours and technology and family members even, so that you protect your ability to do this sort of sustained focused attention on something that matters to you or a problem you have to solve or whatnot. And I feel like when you're talking about spiritual health or even just kind of any sort of magic at all, I think there are certain parts of ourselves that we just can't experience or access without protecting that kind of attention. And that just necessitates, you know, switching off some of these other things and making really hard choices about how to continue to participate in certain technologies and how to not participate anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That reminds me again of the magician archetype from the King Warrior Magician Lover book, where it's like the magician is like kind of knows how to insulate and how to create ritual spaces. And I think that, yeah, we have to be able to insulate our social spaces from these like incursions of, you know, beeps and boops.
Mm-hmm.
Not just our social spaces and our mental spaces. And I think that's something that's part of sort of the broader idea of magic, which is that you're sort of making sacred spaces and protecting sacred things and sort of defending yourself from malignant spirits, which really is a way of saying, you know, from mental pop-ups that you are not helping, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's really, it makes sense to me why mindfulness is something that you talk about a lot too in your podcast, because that to me is really what mindfulness sometimes is or can be, is like a protecting of spaces or acknowledging the sacredness of some everyday moments that we don't normally protect. Mm-hmm. Like an example would be, I read this book recently from a dietitian, and it was really about like feeding your family and how to kind of give your kids more freedom in what they eat and kind of turn the control over to them. But one of the things she wrote about that surprised me is before you eat, kind of pausing and like just taking a few breaths. And she was just saying as adults, even when you just eat your lunch by yourself, like take a few breaths and kind of take a moment to set that space aside. And she didn't use the word sacred or, you know, mention a magical place or mention mindfulness, but it's just the idea that there are so many moments that can be made more rich when we kind of put up a guard around them and protect them and make them special in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the chapters in this book, it's called Spend Time Alone. And then this whole chapter is all about basically how one of the biggest differences in our world from now, between now and like 10 or 15 years ago, is that even though 10 or 15 years ago, we had the internet, we had TV, we had radio, we had all these different sources of kind of noise. But what we didn't have that we have now is this like solitude deprivation, where nowadays it's possible to go days or weeks at a time without ever experiencing solitude, except for, I guess, when you're asleep. But, you know, you can be waiting in line somewhere and be browsing your phone. You can be alone, like physically alone, but listening to podcasts. And because we have like portable communications / entertainment devices at all times, we never get to experience the benefits of solitude and silence. Especially because they're so addictive.
I read another book about this. I can't remember if this other book I read mentioned Cal Newport's book mm-hmm. or if Cal Newport's book mentioned this other one, but that's a lot of times how I find like my next book to read is when I'm reading a book I like, I usually write down any books mentioned. But the book is called Lead Yourself First. Mm-hmm. And the title doesn't sound, you know, like it's related, but the subtitle is Inspiring Leadership Through Solitude. But that's what the whole book is about, like just the need for solitude and how it's not available in our world very often. But especially to be a leader and just to think clearly, people have to have that and they have to go find it. So,
right.
Just, if anyone out there is listening and enjoyed Cal Newport's book and wants to try another one, that's a good one too.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll put a link to that in the show notes and also to these books by Cal Newport. So I wanted to say one more thing though, as far as changes that I've made since doing this digital declutter, and actually probably the biggest change that I made really, which is that I downgraded my data plan from unlimited high-speed data to just 7 gigabytes, which most people don't even use 7 gigabytes in a month, but since I don't have Wi-Fi at home, my wireless data is my only like home internet. And so I in the past I was using, you know, 25 or 30 gigabytes a month typically. But after doing, while I was doing this 30-day digital declutter, I was watching my data usage pretty carefully to see, you know, if I'm not using these services, how much less data am I using? And so anyway, what I realized was that I could cut my data usage quite a bit if I make a few changes in my life. So it hasn't been too hard, but the biggest thing, I had to change a few settings on my phone to preserve more, to use less data. So so that apps don't use as much data in the background. And then I changed my browser settings so that it doesn't load large images by default. Like if there's like a large image that I want to see, I have to like click on it and tell it to load the image manually. Mm. Or I can make it just like load all the images on the page. And then the biggest thing is like, when it comes to podcasts and streaming video, I have to download them while I'm on Wi-Fi and then watch them or listen to them later. So basically, like, I will download podcasts at work and then listen to them at home. And then with streaming video, it depends on the service. Like with Netflix, some of their content you can download and some of it you can't. And I think that's the case with most of them. But, yeah. I'm on Disney Plus right now, and that I, that everything on there you can download for later viewing. So I just download it when I'm on Wi-Fi somewhere. And that's kind of created some limits just naturally, because I can't just, I'm not going on there and just like browsing their entire catalog of stuff to watch. I just am browsing like the five things that I downloaded maybe.
Yeah. You have to make a choice. You have like a time when you have to make a choice and then it's decided for you.
Yeah. And it has to be premeditated, you know? Yeah. So with podcasts, it's not as essential to do that. Like, I have definitely downloaded some over my data plan, but there's no way that I could download. There's no way that I could stream or you download on my data as many podcasts as I was listening to before doing this declutter, because I would just burn through my data really fast. So I have, even with that, I have to be a little more deliberate. And speaking of which, so there's a one thing toward the end of this book that really stuck out to me, which was his description of this idea of slow media, which he compares to like the slow food movement. And it's kind of about sort of ritualizing your media consumption so that instead of just ingesting sort of mindlessly, you set aside time and then you really like look forward to it. And then you really carve out that time. So it's a special experience. And then overall, you're just consuming less. So I've kind of started doing that a little bit with when it comes to watching shows and movies, where because I don't have data plan at home now, I'm either downloading them ahead of time or I'm checking them out from the library, and sometimes through interlibrary loans, so I have to wait a while to get it on the DVD or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I found that, so I've been watching the new Star Wars show, The Mandalorian. And, most shows that come out on streaming services, they just dump the entire season all at once. And then, but with Disney, with The Mandalorian, they're just doing it one episode a week. And I've actually found this been probably the best, like, TV watching experience I've had for probably, like, several years. Because it's like, I'm looking forward to it all week. And then it's just maybe a 30 to 40 minute episode, and I can watch it because it's streaming. I don't have to like sit down at a certain time and watch it like you used to have to do with TV. I can, you know, kind of watch it at my leisure. And then actually, because I'm not on Twitter anymore or on Reddit, or I'm not really spending much time on YouTube, I didn't get spoiled on it, which apparently there were major spoilers all over the internet, like on day one of that show. And the end of the first episode had like this really big sort of reveal that I watched the first and second episodes at the same time. So like, I think I saw the first episode like 5 or 6 days after it came out. And I was completely surprised by the ending. Even though apparently the entire internet knew about it from like, you know, hours after they released it, you know, online. So it's really the combination of having the technology of streaming, but having the kind of slower paced model of like releasing an episode once a week and being not plugged into all this like commentary online, it's really made for a really great experience.
I can totally see that, because when you have to wait, your mind, if it was good TV, like you're going to be thinking about it and like you have questions about it, and you can kind of like sort of build on what you watched instead of just like having your itch scratched immediately right when the next one comes on. Like, it makes it a richer experience.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think it's more enjoyable then to talk to other people about it too, because with these shows that drop a whole season at once, like you don't have that sort of thing where everybody's at the same point in the series at the same time. And so I like to talk to people about it and sort of speculate. But with most shows nowadays, you're like, you don't really want to say too much because they haven't caught up, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really, it's really set, it's when I read that part about the slow media, I really liked that, and this, you know, because it kind of satisfied that idea to me that I'm, you know, it's like I'm getting my Star Wars fix, but in a way that feels really like it's adding to my life rather than just sort of binging something on binging a show and wasting a few days. I'm really savoring it. So besides what's mentioned in the book, do you have any other sort of strategies you think people might use to pursue digital minimalism?
I don't know. The book mentioned a lot of things, but I think with each person, you really just have to think about your lifestyle, you know, and your constraints and like your goals for why you want less technology in your life or why you want boundaries on that technology. And so I think a lot of the methods will just be dictated by individual experience.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I found like the last couple of years, I've gradually kind of pursued more and more different strategies for reducing the sort of mental clutter from this stuff. So one thing I've been really careful about is like with my email, is that anytime I get an email that is from some kind of mailing list that I don't want, I just like scroll to the bottom and there's almost always an unsubscribe button at the bottom. Usually it's in like small print, but that helps a lot where like really my email inbox is pretty clean when it comes to that stuff. There's only a few things that I've found that I couldn't unsubscribe to via that mechanism. And I either had to just mark it as spam, so it eventually would just get filed in spam, or, you know, track down my login information for something and go onto their website and unsubscribe. And then also on my phone, I've, you know, gone through basically really carefully curated my notifications that pop up on my phone. So right now, the only thing that I think the only thing that ever makes a sound or a vibration is a phone call.
Wow, nice job.
So otherwise, I don't see anything else unless I actually turn on the screen and look at it. So you can go into your settings. It's going to vary a little bit depending on what kind of phone you have, but you can usually go in and go app by app and change the settings, or sometimes you can also change some of the global settings. But I found like between the phone's settings menu and then the settings within each app, you can usually kind of curate it so you can get what you want. And so like I have my texts, when I get texts or emails, those will pop up on, they'll pop up, but they won't make any sound or vibration or anything. They won't turn on the phone screen or anything. So I have to actually look at my phone to see those. And then pretty much every other kind of notification I've just turned off entirely. So I don't see notifications from all these random apps that are trying to get me to buy stuff or just trying to get me to use the app more. So that, yeah. I think that's helped quite a bit, so that when I do turn on my phone, I don't just see this massive flood of notifications that I don't want.
I actually do both of those things as well. Although with the notifications, there's like two different apps that I've allowed, but one is like a teacher communication app. So I keep that where I can see it. Mm-hmm. And the other one is my Spanish app, although honestly, it harasses me so much. I've attempted to change that one too, even though I kind of want it to guilt trip me. Uh-huh. But yeah, I do the same two things and unsubscribe from everything. Which mostly works.
And then another thing that I've done over the last couple of years is that I've moved away from using digital tools for productivity, and I've kind of moved into more analog tools. Like I used to, you know, use Google Calendar, and I used to use a digital to-do list and the, you know, digital habit trackers and those kind of things. And I basically just stopped using all of those and switched to using a bullet journal, which I found just, it's so much easier to focus. Because I think that when I'm going to use a productivity tool, the last thing I need is to be distracted by all the things that a phone can distract you with, or a computer. And I think that if I'm really like sitting, you know, if I'm like, okay, gotta focus up, gotta, you know, plan my day, then having to look at my phone is just a huge, like, way to get sidetracked. Whereas if I open up my bullet journal, there's nothing in there to, like, browse for distraction. It's just, you know, just the facts. I mean, there, I do lose a little bit of productivity from the standpoint of I don't have, like, I have, you know, I have to manually sort of maintain, like, the calendar and stuff. Whereas I have to go look at a calendar to write down, like, which days of the week go with which dates, you know, things like that, yeah. Where a computer would just do it for you. But the cost of that is really low compared to the benefit of just not having to deal with the technology. And I still use Google Calendar for work because it's the collaborative aspect of it where, you know, everybody can see the same calendar. But for my own personal stuff, I just use my own analog journal.
It's two different tasks too. Like sometimes if I'm trying to generate ideas, I find using like a to-do list on my computer or phone really helpful when you're just kind of adding more and more items. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to like today and what is most important for right now, that task of like narrowing and selecting, that for me is also easier on paper because it's just, you know, you're just kind of picking the things that are important versus just the multitudes of things that could be done.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Let's see. Any other strategies you think people might be able to use? I feel like we definitely didn't cover every single thing from the book, but we definitely touched on all of the sort of broad strokes of the book.
I can't remember if this is in the book, but one of the things I do is I just try to keep my devices kind of clean, which sounds weird, but like I like to keep on my desktop the things that are like active projects and mm-hmm. remove the other ones. And I like to go through my files about twice a year and get rid of files that I'm not working on anymore that don't need to be saved. Mm-hmm. And then the same with my, you know, inbox. I definitely like once a task is done, it's, you know, gone and out of there. So it's not a distraction. And then the same with my phone. Like I like to take the apps that are things I really want to do, like whether it's, you know, learning a language or like if I want to record my food and exercise for some reason, or if I want to make sure I'm, you know, looking at my photos more often or using my camera, like I'll move those things to the front. And then things that I feel like are not as important, I, you know, move to the back and try to keep away from sight.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like having a clean desk or a clean room.
Yeah.
Where it clears up your headspace, I think.
Yeah. And the physical, you know, it's weird to say physical on a device, but the physical reminder, like, you know, I have to give my kid allergy medicine and we don't want to forget that because it always backfires when we do. So that's like the one thing that's out on our bathroom counter is to remind us to do the allergy medicine. We keep it out.
Right.
So I just try to use my phone the same way.
Yeah. That's kind of how I am too. I just, it's like I uninstall pretty much everything that I can uninstall in terms of like now that I'm not really active on social media, I kept all those apps uninstalled. And then the stuff that I actually use regularly and helpfully, I keep on my sort of home screen on my phone. But everything else, I've sort of stashed away somewhere out of sight so that it's just not... Like, I have some games on my phone still, but I don't have them... Like, you have to kind of dig down through a few layers to get to them.
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to think if there's anything else in this book that we should touch on. I don't really think so. I mean, he does have this whole chapter about reclaiming leisure. mm-hmm. And we did touch on this a little bit when it comes to the digital declutter, but basically he's talking about kind of being proactive about having sort of more challenging ways to spend your free time that are like fun and relaxing, but also stimulating and mentally. And how, you know, it's so our devices are always ready to just suck up any available attention that we have and give us a low quality leisure that we don't necessarily feel good about later.
Yeah.
But he talks about being a lot more deliberate and kind of joining groups, like, you know, maybe like a book group or a sports team or something like that. He talks about enjoying, I think he talks about enjoying like food and media in a more deliberate way. He talks about building and fixing things and kind of learning, working with your hands. He talks about playing games, like face-to-face, like board games and things like that, to kind of get this, like, what he called supercharged sociality. But the idea, it's the idea that, like, a board game, for instance, gives you this, like, heightened social communication that's even, like, much more intense than a typical day-to-day communication that our brains find really stimulating. And, yeah, so I don't know that I have too much to say about that chapter exactly. I guess I like that chapter, but I guess I found like that part of it is not something I've ever struggled with. Like I always have more stuff I want to do, and I'm always making my own fun and challenging myself. So I didn't really find it earth shattering in that way. Not to toot my own horn, but
that's probably true of me too, because I always have like 100 hobbies that that I'm pursuing. I'm guilty of many hobbies, but I do think like that chapter to me, like that just sounds like a great life lived, you know, like a celebration of being alive.
Yeah.
And I do know like from my past experiences. So when I was single, I deliberately didn't have a TV, and then I was also like pretty cheap, so I didn't pay for internet. And so there were times when, and I still don't really watch TV myself at home, but it's just on sometimes. And then I do have internet, so I'm a little more distracted than I was before. And like, I could get a ton done. Like there was a time when I walked 6 miles a day, and I was, at the time I was learning French and reading Harry Potter in French and then in Spanish. And I just had time for all kinds of pursuits because there just was absolutely no time after work that was going to, you know, TV or internet surfing of any kind.
Right.
And I would like, you know, I would go to Panera on the weekends and check my email. And if there was something I need to look up, I would look it up then. But that was kind of it. And so, you know, my life has changed a lot. So like now I have a child and I have a kind of like more of a household to manage, and I have a lot more to do anyway. But I also just think, you know, if you want a life where you want to be like, you know, learning to play an instrument or, you know, playing games with friends a lot, like there, we can't do it all. So letting go of more connectedness does facilitate that kind of good life lived, you know?
Yeah. The time has to come from somewhere.
Yeah. I have this fantasy that like I've had for a long time about getting a cabin, and like the thing that I think is going to be like a contention is my family. In my family, is like, for me, the cabin is the best version of the cabin in my head if it doesn't have television.
Right.
And I think it's because when I picture us at the cabin, I picture all the activities that I want to do. Like I picture waking up and kayaking and then swimming and fishing and like gardening. And what I definitely don't picture is like, you know, having TV on in the background. Like I just think about really present time, whether it's playing games or like doing pottery or whatever. It's all like, it's that good life lived to me, like right, being really active in whatever's going on.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of TV, another thing that I do is, so I don't have a TV, but I have a projector in my tiny house. And basically one of the sort of side effects of that is that it's really a pain in the butt to watch anything while it's light outside.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have occasionally like blanked out my windows. I mean, I have blinds, but they're not really effective enough in darkening the house, because it's kind of a cheapo low end projector that's not that powerful. So the effect of that is like, depending on the time of year, I might watch more or less stuff, where in June, when it's when it's light into, you know, after 10 p.m., then I really don't watch much of anything. But I have a lot of stuff I'm trying to do during that season in terms of gardening and other projects outside. Whereas yeah. now, when it's really cold outside and there's snow on the ground, and I don't really have too much I'm trying to get done outside, and it gets dark at like 4:30 p.m., I'm watching a lot more stuff now and playing more video games, which I do feel pretty good about, because I'm like, oh, this is when I wanted to do that stuff. Because in June, I was like, oh, I'm going to play Legend of Zelda in December, you know?
Yeah.
So, I in that sense, it's like, it kind of is, it just creates a natural balance there.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the projector too, you know how you were talking about his chapter or his section where he talks about making the technology use that we choose a little more sacred and special. And I think for some reason, like changing the medium like that of using a projector just kind of makes it like, because you have to work to get it set up and it has to be dark, it kind of, you know, sets it apart a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of ritualizes it a little more.
Yeah. For some reason, like, I thought about doing that too. Like, I can picture a cabin where, you know, every Friday night we set up a projector. I just can't picture it where it's like on all the time in the background.
Yeah. Well, also, even when it's dark outside, it's like my lights in my house have to be dimmed or off to be able mm-hmm. to have a good picture on the projector. So I don't really multitask when I'm using it. I'm just, except for maybe eating, but it's like, if I'm watching something, I'm like, okay, I'm done with other stuff. I'm turning the lights down or off, and I'm just watching this thing. I'm not just like putting it on in the background while I wash the dishes or whatever.
Yeah, you get a lot more. I mean, I'm not even like a huge, you know, movie lover. I feel bad saying that to you, but it's funny to me sometimes. Like Frozen is a funny example, but I probably watched, like in air quotes, I sat in front of a screen that was showing the movie Frozen like probably 4 or 5 times before I actually watched it. And I watched it in your theater. And when I finally watched it, I was like, this is great. This is a really good, funny movie. But I had seen it, not really though, like so many times, but every time I'd watched it before, I was like, you know, it was at a friend's house and their kids were watching it, but I was chatting with the friend, or I was working on something on my computer while my kid was watching it on the TV, but I really wasn't watching it. So sometimes just actually giving something your attention makes the thing, you know, so much better.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Same, kind of like food.
Yes. Yeah.
Where you can just eat something and not realize how good it is until you slow down.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, I think that about wraps up our conversation, unless you have anything else you want to add.
I don't, but this was fun. We should just call each other and have structured conversations about certain topics yeah. all the time.
Well, we could have a book group or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, that wraps up our conversation on digital minimalism. Again, the full title is Digital Minimalism, Choosing a Focused Life in a Noisy World by Cal Newport. So check that out if you want. And thanks for coming on the show, April.
Thank you, Gary.
And I'll see you at Christmas.
All right.
Now it's time for Magic Mailbag. Today we have an anonymous email. Mysterious. All right, so today I have an email, and I asked the sender for permission to read it on the air, but they requested to remain anonymous. So, here we go. Hello, Gary. I've been following your podcast for a while. Your podcast introduced me to this wonderful world of magic for rationalists, so I would like to thank you for that. I've also begun to look up other like-minded people that are interested in this niche subject, and surprisingly, I found quite a few. I want to share the people that I've found. First is Sedna Wu. She has a YouTube channel and talks about being an atheist witch. Her methodology is very similar in that she believes that witchcraft is basically a placebo and still gets benefits despite knowing it to be the case. She calls it the open label placebo effect. You can find her channel here, and I'll include these links in the show notes for you. The second one is a blog called Obscure Clouds. She honestly calls herself a pantheist pagan, but her writing mainly discusses about being a skeptic and practicing witchcraft. I find her background in anthropology really unique, too. Site www.obscureclouds.com. I'm not sure if you know some Reddit communities, but there is also r/secular tarot for non-spiritual tarot stuff, and r/SASS witches. It stands for Skeptic, Agnostic, Atheist, and Science Seeking. Love the name. For witchcraft in a secular form. Lastly, I know you mentioned in the tarot episode that you were trying to find resources for a secular approach to tarot. I found a podcast that teaches tarot in a very skeptic-friendly approach. It's called the Rootlock Radio Podcast. I don't really know what his personal views are about spirituality in general, but he doesn't believe that tarot is a fortune-telling device, but a tool of introspection. I also find that the way he taught tarot is interesting because he integrates tarot with his background in psychotherapy. You can find his podcast here, soundcloud.com/rootlockradio, or an RSS feed. All in all, I hope you find this useful. So thank you to this anonymous emailer for those resources, and I hope the audience is able to find those useful. Again, you can find those links in the show notes.
You can find the Placebo Magic Podcast and my poetry and other writing on the web at farmcodegary.com. Send your feedback to farmcodegary@protonmail.com and let me know if I can read your feedback on the show. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com and licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. You can support the show by giving us a review on your podcast app of choice, sharing an episode with a friend, or becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/placebomagic. Patreon supporters also gain access to our Patreon-exclusive bonus show. Remember, magic is a metaphor, and metaphor is magical.